Grant's my little buddy, Josh Vernier. Talking ball again with you guys. You guys love Vern. You get Vern. It's great stuff. He does a great job. He's got a great baseball mind. Jay Binkley with Steven Serta. Text line and Twitter, obviously letting me know what I should have used on Friday. Told you what happened. Doing two shows, doing this, doing a segment at night, smelled a little right. Went down to The Rock, figuring those guys would have cologne. They didn't. They just had some coconut-smelling hand cream. Didn't want it. I asked the guy that I thought would carry cologne, Sean Levine. He had Axe body spray. He came in the clutch. He goes, use this, Binkley. This stuff's great. And I proceeded to use the Axe and smelled like Axe the rest of the day. A lot of you said I should have gone Febreze instead of that. And listen to this. I did come into this office smelling like Febreze about a week ago. It's the only thing I had. I had some Febreze in the car. Yeah, I used Febreze. I had this Royals shirt on. It smelled of Febreze. But here's the funny thing about it. And why you like to be Belichickian in a way, I guess. You know, expect the unexpected, like Denny Matthews always says. You know, I come rocking. I don't, you know, I'm not GQ by any stretch of the imagination. Probably the furthest thing from it, to be quite honest with you, is the young people say I look like trash sometimes, like a bum. The Tide Pod Eaters, that's what they would say.
But just random young people walk up to you and say you look like trash?
You know what I mean? I've heard it. You know, I mean, I don't dress that nice. I don't dress that nice.
You said random people walking up to you on the street and telling you look
no,
like trash?
No, they don't do that. I may have gotten some tweets about the way I've dressed at times. You know, I rock the shorts and the T-shirt a lot. You know, my thing missing is a whistle, how I dress most of the time, to be quite honest with you. And I don't have those polyester bike shorts on. Not bicycling, bike shorts. You guys know what I'm talking about. The coach used to rock back in the day. Those that are the real ones, about my age, they remember. They remember the bike shorts.
Yeah, they're just like basketball shorts.
Yeah, but here's the thing. So last year for Christmas, my mom gave me Versace. I thought it was Versace, but it's Versace, right? That's what. But it looks like it's Versace. She goes, no, it's Versace. Put this stuff on. So I rock it. You know, I'm very misleading. You're sitting here wearing the shoes untied. You've got your gym shorts on. You're rocking your 6'10 t-shirt from Uncle D's. And you've got a trace of Versace on. It's all class, man. Not really. It's like 50% class. You know, the smell is the Versace. So, yes, I use Levine's body spray. You guys can give Levine a hard time if you want to about this, but I'm not going to because he came in the clutch. It was either coconut hand cream from The Rock or Axe body spray from one Sean Levine. I chose to smell like Levine for the rest of the day. So blame me, and once again, my apologies to Levi's Sons or Garrison and Sons Brewery that had to come down and smell me. Started the show off talking about identity, buying in, something we've heard a little bit about, the culture. You know, Dayton Moore kind of spoke of this as well when he was talking MLB Network, you know, at the winter meetings. You know, it's this process of buying into what you're doing. Because that's when you're a team, when you're buying into the ultimate goal. You're believing it. Remember Clark Hunt in the franchise that showed the Chiefs do every other Wednesday? Kind of like Hard Knocks light. You know, gave a directive, win the trophy for my dad. That's a success. Win the whole thing. Win the Super Bowl. He set the parameters. He set the mission statement for the Kansas City Chiefs. He let them know what the expectations were, and I absolutely loved it. Couldn't get enough of it. Injected in my veins, Clark Hunt. That should be my ringtone, to be honest with you. His little speech to the Chiefs. Loved every second of it. But Tyrann Mathieu was on SiriusXM, and he talks about part of the process is buying in. I referenced Dayton Moore. He said this. The expectations are different. You know, beforehand, you could get up here. You know, you try to become a pro. You lose some games, and you fail, essentially. You know, they don't expect that. I told you in 14, 15, and 16, when guys came up to the Royals, you know, with the Brett Eibners that came up or even Merrifield in 16, it wasn't about the training wheel still being on. It's about performance. I've always felt this way about the Steelers organization. Once you go through those doors and you're drafted, you're expected to perform at a certain level. The training wheel's not on anymore. There's no grace period. There's no grace period for losing because it's all right. We always lose. Those are losing organizations that have the mindset that if they're going to play you and you lose, it's okay. It's not the right disposition. This is why the Steelers continue to win. This is why the Patriots continue to win. There's no training wheels when you go in. You buy into the organization and what their goals are. This was the Honey Badger talking about part of the process, buying in.
Part of the process, you know, I'm so proud of Breland and, you know, his commitment and, you know, if you could reflect, you know, rewind, you know, he almost gave up a touchdown. You know, the play before the last play of the game, and he came back the next play. He forgot about that play, and then he lined up across from Edelman and made a great play on the ball to really secure the victory for us. So, and we need that kind of effort from all our guys because this is December football, and so we really got to play good ball, complimentary ball, and we got to do a great job of finishing games.
It's the part of the process, buying in. Chris Jones after the game in New England.
Together. I mean, I feel like we've been together this whole year. We just had to make some corrections, some errors, and play disciplined football. I mean, I feel like progressing in the right direction right now as a defense collectively. We got to continue, though. We gave up 16 points on the road. I feel like we can get better off of that. We got to look at film, see where we made the mistakes. I feel like they ran a couple jet sweeps on us, especially in the red zone right there. So we got to get better at those things. We got to focus on it.
It's the mentality, thanks to Harold Kuntz of Fox 4, who was there with that interview with Jones. And I loved what he said. You know, he was upset they gave up 16 points on the road. That's expectations. Now, we'll deal with that. I mean, like I said, this New England Patriots-Chiefs game, you know, I look at it as a W, not an L. That's what it was. It was a win. You know, and Coward's talking about, you know, unbuttoned or buttoned or whatever he was talking about with this team in penalties, you know, being a problem without referencing the fact they had no penalties the week before. The fact that they have 88 penalties, and the Ravens, that are considered buttoned up, they know what they're doing. They have 90. They have more than the Chiefs. Chiefs are right there with the Patriots. People say they're the model of consistency. Chiefs just 7 more penalties from a team that never gets penalties than the New England Patriots. You know, that's flip-flopping the script. Last year, the Chiefs, number one in penalties, number one in penalty yards. They cleaned that up. Tyrann Mathieu talking about buying in. You know, and I heard some of this from Dayton Moore yesterday on MLB Network when he's sitting down with the crew outside. A little bit of wind in here because they were outside doing it. But Dayton Moore was even asked, like, how do you define success in a rebuilding year? It's about buying in, man. And I see the Chiefs with the same philosophy that Dayton Moore is talking about.
Well, you certainly got to win Major League Baseball games. Bill LaJoy told me many, many years ago that Major League players aren't paid to play, they're paid to win. And so we have to develop that mindset with our group. I really feel the last couple of years, you know, we have emphasized rebuilding way too much, and we have given our players a safety net that it's okay to lose. It's not okay to lose. You've got to go out and win baseball games. But ultimately, if we don't win baseball games, that's on me. I mean, we've got to put the right talent on the field. As Tom mentioned, I mean, our bullpen has not been very good the last couple of years, and we haven't won games late, and we've got to be in a position to do that. And so we don't make excuses for our market, Chris. The economics of the game actually stink. If you want to be very blunt with it, I mean, there is a discrepancy. There's no doubt about it. But we don't make excuses for it. We've got to continue to scout well, develop well, transition homegrown players to the major leagues, and then be in a position when the time comes to be able to make an impactful deal or two and to acquire an important piece on the free agent market.
I love the transparency coming through from the leaders of the organizations here in Kansas City. Dayton Moore's not making excuses. Said right there, the expectation was you come here and players came up from the Royals in 8, 9, and 10, and 11, and 12, 2012. You know, the expectations were to learn to win. You learn to win. This is a training ground for it. And Dayton Moore didn't like using that word rebuild anymore. You know, it's buying in to what the organization's doing. I love the honesty from him as well. You know, talking about the economics of the game stink. Like, you don't hear people say that very often, but what he said was 100% true. Even MLB Network guys, Tom Verducci up there, Cliff Floyd was one of the people up there. And they were saying, hey, you know, that was honesty. That was just pure honesty from Dayton Moore. I mean, I liked hearing it. I liked hearing it so much. Why cut it? Because I liked hearing it. I like what the Honey Badger said. Guys are buying in. I'm getting there's pride, man. Frank Clark's got pride. Honey Badger has pride. They were told his defense is no good. That's the thing, you know. You know, the Honey Badger, when he talked to Pete Sweeney and I, Pat Mahomes told him, you take the defense, I'll take the offense. Very simple of what he said. You know, he was brought in here not only as a player, he was brought in here as a leader. Honey Badger was brought in here for leadership. Leadership that had been missing on that side of the ball. And finally, guys are starting to buy into it. I saw the light switched second half of that Chargers game. I'm identifying that as the moment when the Chiefs' light switch turned with this defense. And hopefully it continues because we didn't see consistency with it. Like earlier this season, teams were having a field day running against the Chiefs, what they were doing. And then we saw the Broncos game where they had 9 sacks in the game. They followed up with 5 sacks against the Packers. And all of a sudden, this team has 14 sacks, creating the identity of a pass rush. But then they lost that game. And why'd they lose the game? Because they gave the Packers the ball at the 1 yard line, 5 minutes left in the game. And the Packers basically went out and were able to run out the clock on the Chiefs, something that doesn't usually happen at Arrowhead Stadium. But then that same philosophy was used this week. There was Tom Brady at the end of the game to win the game, and he didn't do it. Breland makes the play of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs. But we've seen the step in forward. We've seen the step back. The Vikings, the step forward, what they did with Dalvin Cook and Stephon Diggs, and the player of the month in the NFC before they played him, Kirk Cousins. And they looked good. They looked good. Then they took a huge step back in Tennessee and let Derrick Henry run all over them again. And Ryan Tannehill, who's 6-1 as a starter for the Titans, looking good, won the game for him. You know that 3rd and 10, and he scrambles and knocks off a couple Chiefs players? That's what he was doing. But the Honey Badger, you know, he talked about this leadership the whole time. When he was brought in, he was talking about this leadership.
I mean, you know, I think this is our sanctuary. You know, this is our safe haven, and, you know, I mean, the world outside of this can be, you know, a lot harder, a lot tougher than, you know, we expect it to be. And so, you know, I think me as a leader, me as a guy that's been cut, you know, been humiliated, embarrassed, whatever you can, you know, put on it. I think it's important to just embrace the guys around you, really support them, encourage them, and then kind of give them that confidence, that they let them know that you believe in them, and hopefully they'll get to believing in themselves again.
And, of course, I referenced what he told Pete Sweeney and I, you know, right after he signed his contract, what Pat Mahomes told him on the phone.
I spoke with Pat over the phone. He's probably been the guy I've been speaking to the most. And, you know, his whole thing is, you know, I got offense. I just need a guy to come in and really lead the defense in the right way. And that'll be my job. That'll be my task. Amongst a bunch of other things, but I think ultimately it's really coming and giving this team a defensive sense of who we are.
A sense of who we are. This is stuff he said before he even put on the uniform of the Chiefs. So when he was brought in here, he just signed his contract. You know, Mahomes knew what he was doing. He knew he needed that guy like the Honey Badger on defense. And this before Frank Clark, you know, became a member of this. And I think that Matthew and Frank Clark kind of feed off each other and one-up each other. It's good. It's contagious. It spreads from the secondary to Frank Clark. Chris Jones definitely has this, and I think he rubs off on him. You know, when you have a presence like Chris Jones, that, in my opinion, is the second-best defensive lineman in the NFL behind Aaron Donald, whose sky's the limit. He can easily replace him. You know, the Father Time is undefeated. He's a younger guy, and, you know, he's on his way up. The arrow is pointing straight up for Chris Jones and what he can do. But the attitude was contagious. It's not about Pat Mahomes carrying the team all the time. It's all he did last year. It's all people talk about with the Chiefs. Was Mahomes. For good reason. He was carrying the team. He's carried all his teams. From White House in Texas to Texas Tech to the Chiefs. He's been the one-man show without a defense. But he's had a defense step up. And what can they do with the defense? That's the thing about it. You know, there's a lot of complaining about the offense the last 3 weeks. They just haven't looked the same. They're not lighting up the scoreboard. But the bottom line is, look at the standings. Win, win, win. Pounded the Raiders 40-9. Beat the Chargers on a neutral site in Mexico City. Beat the New England Patriots in New England where they'd won 21 straight games. When you can combine, like I've always wondered that. What can Mahomes do with having a defense? To where if he's not on 100%, like we're always expecting his expectations to go through the roof. With Pat Mahomes, you're expecting, you know, 300, 400 yards. But let me tell you something. A lot of quarterbacks that throw for 300 and 400 yards are in losses. Look at Matt Stafford's game logs. That's because they had to come back. Like the Raiders game, they dropped a couple passes in that game. They decided to run the ball to Darwin Thompson. It became a different game. It was very windy. You didn't need to rely on Pat Mahomes to complete. Now, Pat Mahomes could have been over 200 yards. Hell, that Raiders game, where they won 28-10, they would have scored in the second half. They called that 72-yarder back by Hardman. You know, he's shown the ability to stretch the field. Andy Reid's play calling, I do believe, has allowed Mahomes especially that Chargers game and Raiders game, to have open lanes to run. Those weren't designed run plays that he had, but it's because everybody spread out so much, they took off. We should be happy. His knee looks great. He looks fine. Knock on wood. This isn't Gruden, knock on wood, if you're with me. It's just knock on wood. But we worry about these things, but the ultimate day, at the end of the day, you got the win. You know? It's, you know what Colin Coward was talking about, kind of the national narrative on the Chiefs. They beat the Patriots. You would have thought they would have got the run. Here's from the herd, Colin Coward.
Kansas City's one of those teams that's really talented. It reminds me of Steelers teams over the years. You know, Big Ben and Tomlin, big emotion, but they're not buttoned up. And by the way, Pittsburgh beat New England last year 17-10, but they weren't really buttoned up. Kansas City's not buttoned up. 10 penalties, bad special teams, didn't adjust at half, a totally finesse offense. Baltimore's more talented than Kansas City, and they're buttoned up. New England's not that talented, but they're more buttoned up. We are now getting into serious big boy football time. You got to have your act together.
Chiefs are a big boy football team. Finesse, I think, is a dirty word in football. They made the AFC title game last year. They were the Super Bowl favorites this year. They're conducting and carrying themselves as a Super Bowl caliber team, which they exactly are. Now, Baltimore, two of the three losses Lamar Jackson has as a starter are to the hands of Patrick Mahomes. Chiefs beat the Ravens earlier. Yes, Ravens appear to be a different football team than what they were earlier in the season with the Chiefs. But the Chiefs remain their stumbling block like for years the Patriots have for the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, they beat their bully. They beat their nemesis, the New England Patriots. Let's look at penalties. Chiefs 19th in penalties in the NFL. So they're in the bottom half of the NFL in penalties. 7th in penalty yardage. They do have 874. New England's got 81 penalties for 714 yards. A buttoned-up team, as Colin says. Baltimore, who says big boy football, buttoned-up team, has 90 penalties. They have two more penalties than the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, just look at what the other teams are doing. And again, I think a lot of times it's the microscope of what your team is doing and not the NFL. Watch the NFL and look how guys play. You think the Texans, when they sit back and look at them beating the Patriots, finding a way to win even though the Patriots dominated time of possession, Bill Belichick wanted to keep Deshaun Watson on the sideline, and for the most part he did. Watson was scoring a point a minute, more than a point a minute when he was in that game because he had to maximize his opportunities. Then they go out and laid an egg to a quarterback making his first road start in Drew Lock. You give the Broncos scored 38 in their house in Houston. That's not good. That's not good. This is what happens in the NFL. Again, Survivor League here. Well, majority of us went New Orleans to beat the Falcons, which should have happened, but it didn't. That's the NFL. What should have happened doesn't always happen. The Seahawks should have had a better performance against the Rams. They didn't. You know, people are questioning Goff, if he's the right guy. You know, they beat the Seahawks last night with ease. You know, look at the scoreboard. Look at the Raiders beating the Colts. Doesn't make sense. Colts thought they should have won that game. They didn't. Everybody's talking about the Raiders. They go to New York, play the Jets. A week before the Jets were beaten by Cincinnati. And they lost by 31 points. They come into Kansas City with things looking good, a chance to tie the Kansas City Chiefs in the standings with the Chiefs going to the Patriots. Of course, the Chiefs won that game against the Patriots, but the Raiders were thinking that was, I mean, if any teams you could go on the road with, yeah, you'd want the Chiefs to play the Patriots where they'd won 21 straight. But they didn't. They came here and lost by 31. So expect what you want, but look at the league. Watch the league and see what's going on with these teams. And again, Pat Mahomes has never lost by more than a score. That is unbelievable in the realm of the National Football League. That is unbelievable when you can keep your team within a score. So literally, when you go back and watch, and Andy Reid goes back and watches the game, it's got to be frustrating because just something here or there. Dick Vermeil said football always comes down to just a couple of plays, and that's exactly what happens. That's what happens with the Chiefs. And a lot of times this season, I felt they were beating themselves by some of the way the defense was playing at times, the way the teams were able to flip the script on them, like the Colts did. The Colts Princeton that thing all up, Princeton basketball against the Chiefs. They didn't light up the scoreboard. Defense looked good, okay. But was that the intention of the Colts? No, they wanted to run the ball. They wanted to control the clock. That's what the Texans did. That's what the Patriots wanted to do. It's what they wanted to do against the Chiefs, but they didn't do it. But that's this league, man. It is so unpredictable. You never know what's going on week to week, but the Chiefs have had a mark of consistency. Andy Reid's had a mark of consistency. The only year he didn't make the playoffs, he went 9-7. You know, he still won. Still was a winner. This team went, what, 9-0 the year after picking first in the draft? He's done a lot with this team. But he needs the full effort of the team. And I think with Spagnuolo coming in here and changing, and again, 43.5% blitzes on Tom Brady dropbacks. When the league was at 30.8%, that's the highest against Tom Brady. Spags didn't care. He said the one way to get to this guy is putting pressure on him. And we should applaud that. What Steve Spagnuolo did, consider where he came from, coming in here, new faces across it, new leaders on this defense, new coaches. I mean, they cleaned house. Bring in Dave Merritt and Sam Madison for the secondary. Matt House is linebacker coach. Brendan Daly on the defensive line. You know, accomplished guys. Not only that, I think for the first time in a long time, the Chiefs need to worry about their defensive staff getting promoted and going elsewhere. Brendan Daly becoming a D coordinator. Matt House becoming a different defensive coordinator. We've seen this with the offense attrition for Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, soon Eric Bieniemy. Kafka's going to end up being offensive coordinator of this team. It's what happens. Teams go after Andy Reid guys. Andy Reid, 25% of this league. Ron Rivera was a Reid disciple. He was fired, so that percentage goes down after that. But no, we should applaud the fact they got three wins in a row. And going and winning in a place where they'd won 21 straight, that's not easy. Keep in mind the other Patriots losses happened on the road. It happened to Baltimore and it happened to Houston. They win in Foxborough. And now we got this whole, you know, scandal where they're out there filming the freaking Bengals. What were they doing against the Chiefs? You know, the Chiefs check every drone? Do they check that guy with the binoculars wearing the Mahomes jersey at all their games? Don't put it past them. You cheat against the Bengals, you cheat against the best. What they do against the Chiefs, that's the real question. We'll never know. But again, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. They're trying real hard. Another guy who tries real hard is Pete Sweeney. He's the editor-in-chief of ArrowheadPride.com. We like to check in with Pete Sweeney during the week, and I have several things for Pete going forward, including the injury situation for the Kansas City Chiefs. We talk to Sweeney Dog next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back around 1:30. Jay Binkley with Steven Serta producing the operation. Talk a lot of stuff today. Had a lot of fun. Certainly spent our time talking Kansas City Chiefs. Talked a little Kansas State football with John Kurtz. Talked about cheating with the New England Patriots. And talked about body spray. But joining us now, the editor-in-chief, ArrowheadPride.com, who does not use body spray, Pete Sweeney. What's up, Pete?
I don't know if you've smelled me enough to determine that for sure.
I borrowed some body spray from Sean Levine.
I appreciate the intro. Good to talk to you, my man, Bink.
Good talking to you too, Pete. Mecole Hardman, our guy Mecole. We've talked about it on the postgame show, about the effectiveness. Talked about the pregame. What Kent Swanson and I thought he'd be the breakout guy. They were going to give him a chance. He did get that touchdown. Maximized his, 13 snaps in the game. Should Mecole Hardman start getting a stronger look from the Chiefs?
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed today on Twitter, but the Chiefs go and tweet out, seems like every time we need a big play, Mecole Hardman answers the bell.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, he's got less than 15 snaps in the game, Chiefs. What are we doing? So I gave them a wonder emoji for their troubles. I think it makes sense, right? I mean, the yards per reception are right there. I mean, I know that stat doesn't necessarily tell everything. Ethan, our stats guy at AP, would be the first to tell you that. But that being said, he's been more effective than Sammy Watkins. The way the Chiefs have gone about it, you almost wonder if Andy Reid is saving this guy for round one of the playoffs, where maybe he has some stuff built in for all these speed guys that the NFL just hasn't seen before. And maybe in previous years, they've used all their bullets a little bit too early and really couldn't catch anyone by surprise. Because, yeah, I mean, this is a rookie now. What are we, in week 15? He should be touching the ball a little bit more for sure.
24 catches, 2 yards shy of 500 yards, 6 touchdowns, averaging an incredible 20.8 yards per reception. And I do put some stock into that. Listen, Belichick put stock into that. You know, he even referenced, you know, Mecole Hardman, the yards per catch, it's talking about it being unbelievable. And it's 2 yards more than anybody else in the NFL. Quarterbacks, and I've talked about 153.6 rating when throwing to him. Maybe Andy is saving him for a little bit. He's kind of been that special weapon for the Chiefs. And again, 6 touchdowns on just 24 catches. You can start saying all Mecole Hardman does is catch touchdowns. Maybe we'll see an increase of him. And I'm with you on that, Pete. I think this is a guy, when you get to the postseason, clearly Belichick's strategy was taking out Sammy Watkins. Gilmore was on him. He saw what Watkins did to him in the title game because he concentrated more on Hill and Kelsey. But that's, you know, that's the byproduct of having weapons.
Yeah, sometimes I think in the NFL, and especially with the Chiefs and Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes and all that goes along with it, you have what is an embarrassment of riches, and there are only, what, between 40 and 60 offensive plays for you to kind of use most of the time, and sometimes the rookie gets left out when you have guys like Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill and now several running backs. You know, one guy that could saw a lot of playing time in his return was Spencer Weir, leading the running backs in playing time. So there's a lot of mouths to feed. Now, that being said, when the ball's in his hands, things do happen. And so I think at a certain point, especially when these games start to matter more, when you get into the postseason and really down the stretch, especially if the Patriots can drop one, you got to at least think about using Mecole Hardman a little bit more.
And Damian Williams, you know, didn't play last week, often injured Damian Williams. Does he come back this week, and what does that do to the rotation?
It's a good question. I can't imagine the Chiefs have to be too high right now on Damian Williams. It seems like they put their trust into LeSean McCoy when it comes to carries, but you know, Spencer Ware has been back in the mix. I think all these guys will be active, but it's just been so random this year. It's extremely, extremely hard to predict. And I imagine it's something that Andy Reid likes.
Well, the one thing about it, too, is we saw Ware get the most carries. That was the biggest surprise to me, I think, Pete, because, you know, there's those thoughts. I had the thoughts, is he going to play or not? Obviously, that mattered with Damian Williams. But if Damian Williams is healthy, does Spencer Ware still get the bulk of the carries? And where does that push Darwin Thompson?
Yeah, and then what was weird is, so McCoy ended up having the carries. It was Ware that led in snaps. And so I think it's a part of, okay, well, Ware knows the playbook, and he's okay with these protections. And they still don't seem to completely trust Darwin Thompson in that regard. And you got to be careful with these running backs in the sense that if one guy gets more carries when he's involved and one guy's been there for pass blocking, start to get a little predictable. That's why I think you saw so many different running backs carry the football against the Patriots. You know, we saw even Tyreek Hill and even Travis Kelce had a carry in this game to remain unpredictable. I think Damian Williams probably re-enters the lineup if he is healthy to go. I think you'll see whether or not in the Wednesday injury report, whether he's a full participant. But at this point, you're winning football games. I don't know if you change that much when it comes to the running backs. I wish the Chiefs would have used Darwin Thompson more at the end of this game because of what happened against the Raiders. He was picking up yardage. I understand it was garbage time, but Darwin Thompson was picking up yardage at the end of that football game. I would have loved to see him in this spot. That was a one-score game, but we just didn't get the opportunity to do so. I don't know if Darwin gets any legitimate time this year. I'm starting to come to that realization.
What do you expect your fan confidence poll to be at this weekend, Pete?
I think so. We'll release that on Thursday, the SB Nation fan pulse. It's been high, I think 95, 96 this year. I imagine to be in the low 90s. People got to be feeling pretty good. I understand there was a lot of calls that went the Chiefs' way, but people got to be feeling pretty good about finally knocking off Tom Brady, and you're really entering the playoffs, hopefully, if you continue to win as an AFC powerhouse. This will be an interesting challenge because I sometimes – you're quick to look at the record, but this is a Denver Broncos team that's playing really well. You still got to take care of business. If the Chiefs can then beat the Broncos, I mean, this thing will be close to 100 come next week.
Pete, what have you learned about the Pat Mahomes hand? Obviously, you paid attention to Andy Reid intently, even asked him questions. Aaron Borgman, that does stuff for Arrowhead Pride, the injury expert that you guys have. What's your best guess on Pat this week?
I'm guessing. I think he plays. I think they're really careful this week. I think even second year as a starter, Pat Mahomes is already to the point where the Chiefs would feel comfortable him just getting thrown out there into the mix with not much practice time. So if that calls for him to not touch the football as much on Wednesday and Thursday of this week, I don't really think that that's a problem. Like, I think they'll just rest it as much as it needs until he's good to go on Sunday. Now, I don't think that hand is a guarantee to be 100%, but we've talked about before, seemingly now, with every single part of Mahomes' body, that even if it's not 100%, you're still dealing with a quarterback who the Chiefs believe is better than the other quarterback on the other sideline, even with his ailments in the National Football League.
Pete, when the Bears play the Chiefs play the Bears here in 2 weeks, it's a Sunday night game. We're going to be here late, or are we going to be flexed earlier?
Well, that's an interesting question, too. It's so hard to predict because there just aren't a ton of other opportunities for games that are interesting.
Okay? New Orleans Titans, I think, is one.
What'd you say?
New Orleans Titans.
Yeah, that's one because the Titans have suddenly emerged. You need something to replace it. And with the way Trubisky has been playing lately, you start to get that easy storyline of Trubisky and Mahomes being in the same draft and how people have questioned Trubisky. If we want the Bears game flexed back, you're going to need to see the Packers maybe defeat the Bears. If the Bears win this game, I think they'll keep it the way it is. It's a quarterback-driven league, and Mahomes versus Trubisky is just too interesting, I think, for the Chiefs, with the Bears still having things to play for. But if the Bears were to drop a game against the Packers this weekend, then I could see, the Saints and Titans becomes interesting. The lowly NFC East game that week, because of the records, Cowboys versus Eagles, they have the same record right now. If they're both 7-7, and that game is seemingly for a chance to make the playoffs, even at 8-8, I think that's another possibility. It doesn't seem to matter record-wise when it comes to playoff contention. If I'm having the bet, I bet you the Chiefs end up keeping that slot to feature Trubisky versus Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, Trubisky versus Mahomes. They've won 4 out of the last 5 games. It's Reed versus the predecessor, Matt Nagy, that worked for him. I mean, there's storylines, which TV loves. They love storylines. There's storylines. All of a sudden, Mahomes has been a big draw on television, having him in that game. I mean, we saw what the ratings were for the Chiefs and Patriots. Keep in mind, a lot of that's Patriots and Tom Brady. I get that. But Brady versus Mahomes was certainly a draw.
Yeah, if you want to talk about getting flexed back, here's what I think. I bet you it's Bears-Chiefs. I'm looking at the schedule now. I have it in front of me. Unless the Eagles beat the Redskins and the Cowboys beat the Rams this week. Because the only thing that I think is better for the NFL in their mind than these classic storylines that we're talking about is if you're creating, in essence, another playoff game. And if the Eagles are 7-7 and the Cowboys are 7-7, that game becomes essentially another playoff game.
Pete, here's the rules. I'm looking up the rules for flexible scheduling. It says the change would be made and announced no later than the prior Tuesday, 12 days prior.
That'd be today.
So, yeah, it'd be today. So they can't wait for the Bears-Packers game. They need to make the decision now.
You know what? That's good on you to know the NFL rules behind that. That's an excellent point.
Thanks, Pete.
So maybe they'll have to get their number crunchers out, get Cynthia Freeland to ask her if the percentage of this happening, and then they could call from there.
Yeah, they can't wait till the end of the game. It's not College game day, Pete.
That's what I thought. I thought for a second potentially they could wait to the end of the game, but you're 100% right. That's on me. I apologize. I bet you, with that in mind, I bet you they keep Mahomes versus Trubisky. How about that?
You know what? I didn't exactly know either, Pete. That's what I thought it was, but I didn't 100% know. I was hoping you're my expert and you would know that. But I caught you with your pants down.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good. It's cold. It's cold today. I got to pull these back up.
Talking to Pete Sweeney, editor-in-chief, Arrowhead Pride, and, of course, Arrowhead Pride Radio, 6 o'clock on Wednesday nights, right here at 610 Sports Radio. Then the Arrowhead Pride tailgate 2 hours before each Chiefs game with Kent Swanson. Then Pete and I take your calls immediately following the game. Pete, what do you make of the Frank Clark sick game? I mean, we're starting to see the best of Frank Clark. I mean, really, I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before, kind of, you know, in passing or when we're sitting here getting ready for a show or something like this. It seems like fan sentiment, finally he's got the fans, and he delivered. Now, he's delivered against the Chargers, and he delivered against the Patriots. I don't think there should be more dissent about him.
Yeah, I think it's becoming more clear each week that this guy was legitimately just playing injured for the first part of the year. There's always been that desire with Frank Clark. I think he does follow up the talk when he feels healthy. There was that story, I believe it was after the Monday Night Football game, where he said to Brett Veach, "See what I can do when I'm healthy." And this game, again, you heard the story from Peter Schrager, got out there from the brass of the Chiefs, that Clark was in the hospital, had lost 12 pounds. for all that considered, his 30, 31, 32 snaps were really good in this game. You know, he was effective enough. You hope that his health improves and he could go to the Chiefs cafeteria this week and get some some food, some carb load up, and get back to normal for this Broncos game. But, yeah, he really has seemed, in the scope of this season, to have turned the corner. And so, yeah, I think those doubters can now disappear because I think he'll play well during this last stretch of the year, and the Chiefs right now look like a team that could count on him in the playoffs. And if he plays well down this stretch, the Chiefs are able to run the table here, give themselves a good chance at the bye week, and then he plays well in the playoffs. All the beginnings of the year and him kind of disappearing because of that health will be long forgotten, you know, come a year or two from now.
Pete, the guy coming in here is a Kansas City guy, and Drew Locke. It's been good. He's been good his first two starts. He gets a start at Arrowhead Stadium for his third NFL start. I haven't turned the page yet 100% to the Broncos. We'll start doing that as the week progresses here. Thoughts on Drew Locke coming to town?
He's playing really well. A lot of times in the NFL, I kind of said it before, a lot of times in the NFL, you don't really pay as much to the record. And this is a team that is feeling itself. A week after the Houston Texans defeated the New England Patriots, the Broncos go and do what they did. And for Chiefs fans to feel better, that's something that Andy Reid is already cognizant of. That was something he mentioned on the conference call. One of my questions was, it really felt like in the locker room after the game, the Chiefs were looking at this AFC West title as much more like a checkpoint as opposed to an accomplishment. And then Andy Reid himself basically mentioned, you know, we got to be ready for every week. I think this is the bye week is something that they want. They know it'll give them a better chance. We've talked about how banged up every body part of Mahomes is. They really want this bye week. They're going to need to do it. It's going to be against Drew Locke and getting this win. And Locke looks really good. He looks like a formidable starter. I made fun of you a lot, Jay, about your love for this Denver Bronco. But
no, stop it. I like Drew Locke.
This is one of those storylines that's really cool to Kansas City. We were talking about national storylines. This won't make necessarily national headlines, but I think there'll be a lot of people at Arrowhead Stadium feeling twisted in their stomach when they're, you know, feeling good for the way that Drew Locke looks in this game, and then also at the same time rooting for the Kansas City Chiefs. Cool little storyline, and it's a game that the Kansas City Chiefs certainly need.
You know, when the Broncos fans cringe. They cringed over Shane Ray having that Chiefs tattoo. You know that they're cringing that their only savior at the quarterback position having to go to school in Kansas City. They hate that.
Right, yeah, and it reminds me also, too, of when Jamal Charles said his favorite team was the Denver Broncos, and he's always wanted to be a Bronco. It's those things. That's something I think we forget in Kansas City is, like, Patrick Mahomes is a Texan. Like, all these guys are from all over the country, but they make their home in Kansas City, and I think that's really cool. And it's the same thing in Denver. Now, Drew Locke, I believe, when he was drafted, and you know this better than I did, I think he said something to the extent, well, I'm going to have to come in and into Arrowhead Stadium and win some football games then. And so here's his opportunity early on in his career.
Yeah, he's the rival. He's the division. We've talked about this, Pete. I've always considered the Raiders kind of maybe that rival for the future. I get it. The Raiders, you know, they're not ready for prime time yet, but they drafted extremely well. That rookie class is ridiculous. I was putting the Broncos as a team that hadn't found their identity yet because I'm not sure Locke and Fangio will be the answer for them. I'm afraid if they go offensive-minded head coach, that's when the Broncos could turn the corner. But I'm still putting the Raiders as that next best team in the division going forward.
Yeah, I think right now in years coming up here, it's going to be the Raiders. And once the Raiders start to take a few games from the Chiefs, once they have a few more games going in, like the one we just saw, I know it didn't end up being much of a game, but the build-up to that game was legitimate. I mean, even though the Raiders had dropped one to the Jets, they could still get into okay playoff position, okay division position if they had won that game. So you start to feel a little bit, I think, in the minds of Chiefs fans, at least right now, the Broncos are still that number one division rival, and it's because of all the successful years with Peyton Manning and all the games that he won in a row, they were able to get a Super Bowl, and there are a lot of loud Broncos fans on Twitter and the social media, Facebook, across the board, even with the incomplete, which is the most annoying chant in football.
Oh, yeah.
It still makes the Broncos, I think, in the minds of Chiefs fans, the number one rival. Winning will certainly change that. So you saw that a little bit with the L.A. Chargers until they fell off this year. The Raiders will be next up when it comes to that because of their rookie class And Mike Mayock has shown that he can draft. So let's see what kind of crop he has coming up this next draft as well.
That's one thing. The Chargers, I consider the most relevant this time. They did finish 12-4. They did beat the Chiefs last year in Arrowhead, but they fell by the wayside. But that was the team. No one. It's like the Chargers don't exist. You notice that with their fans? No one goes to their games. No one does it. Right. We don't even consider them a rival, even though technically going into the season, they were the biggest rival. It's like we forget about this team. You know, they go away.
They're a team that is just, it's just one without a home, too. Not that you necessarily feel bad as a Chiefs fan, but they get outdrawn in that home L.A. stadium, and then everything you're hearing is, once they're officially into their new home in L.A., a lot of people are already supporting the L.A. Rams, so there's not even really a market for them to gain new fans. They were rumored to potentially, you know, getting sent to London this year as an opportunity. I don't know where the fans for the Chargers are going to be coming from, because you talk to a lot of San Diegans or, you know, people from San Diego, they want nothing to do with the Chargers. And so, yeah, it's just a team without fans.
Yeah, they should not move, because I consider when they're playing in the Rams' place, they're renting that garage above mom's at mom's house, above the garage, that apartment. That's all they are.
Yeah, and the Rams seem to be the hotter team. They're actually in the mix for the playoffs again this year. They're coming off a good game, and winning makes you very, very much more attractive, especially when someone's picking a team. You know, that's why, you know, this is a little off the beaten path, but that's why a lot of American soccer fans like a team like Manchester United or Manchester City, because they win.
They win.
That's going to be the case in L.A. because the Rams are the more successful team.
Pete, another topic, and I'll leave you with this. Another topic that Zerd and I got into today. Why do you smell so good? We didn't talk about you particularly, but you only seem to smell good. I do not. I used Levine's body spray last Friday. Mm. How do you do it? How do you roll?
So I go with Irish Spring bar soap.
Okay.
And then I have a little trick when it comes to colognes. I wear two separate colognes because here's the thought process behind it. I don't want to smell like anyone else in the world. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's a possibility that someone else out there is using these two particular colognes.
Okay.
But I go for a certain scent. It works for me. I'll tell you off air what that is. I said, there's going to be one other person that smells like me in the world. I want that to be you, Jay Binkley.
Oh, thanks, Pete. I appreciate it, man. Yeah. It's very nice of you. It's very nice of you. I appreciate
it. Yeah, no problem.
Pete Sweeney, editor-in-chief, arrowheadpride.com. The secret way to the stadiums that people know if you're from here. And, of course, Secret Smells by Pete Sweeney. Thanks, Pete.
Take care, Jack.
Take care. You hear that, Serta? Gonna smell like Pete.
Sweet.
Do you know what he uses? He says he's got a combination of two things. Aren't you curious?
Asked Pete what he uses.
Pete's always smelling good, though, right? He does.
I don't think I've ever smelled Pete.
You never smelled Pete?
No.
As much as you guys hang out?
I like to think that we're good friends.
Well, how can you not smell him?
Out here sniffing Big Sween.
Well, I don't sniff Pete either, but here's the thing. I've been to bars with him. You know, you catch a whiff. I mean, it's so prevalent. I think he overdoes it a little bit.
And he's got great hair. It does not shock me that he puts a lot of time and effort into how he smells, because he takes care of his hair as well.
Sure. Well, I told you, I dress like crap, but I wear Versace, you know? To me, I was doing things right. I was winning.
I also said teenagers just come up to you on the street and tell you you look like trash.
They do, those Tide Pod eaters. You can't do anything about it, man. Yeah, I sit in here with Pete for the post game, so he has plenty of opportunities to smell Pete. I went out with his family the other day. You know, Big Pete was here from out of town, you know? Met the Sweeneys, the whole crew, mom, sister, the bunch, and Pete smelled good. Yeah, I'm not sitting there smelling Pete, but he's got a little trick up his sleeves, and I you know, that's what Sweeney would do. If you're gonna do all that TV time like he does, you got to look the part, man. That's why I don't do TV, sort of. I used to, but not anymore. I guess they didn't
because
like
of how you dress.
You know, I own a sport coat and a tie. You know, I've done the pregame show and stuff before in the past, and I did high school football.
Just wear a polo or something.
But I don't know what it is, man. That's why I don't – TV doesn't like me.
You don't even have to wear a suit on TV. You can get by with any of our work shirts.
Not the way I dress, man. They're not throwing me on TV like this. They're just not. I'm surprised they come in here sometimes to record a few things, you know, and they show you. But you notice, I never get put on TV.
Pete wear a T-shirt on television.
But he pulls it off.
He just puts a jacket over it.
He pulls it off. He wears a sport coat. I say, I don't.
Hey, maybe you just need to go get a new sport coat.
Well, yeah.
Get one that's nicely tailored to your physique.
Who's Fesco's guy? Dandy and the Taylor Man? Think yeah. Dandy's got something for me?
Probably.
I want that red sport coat like Fesco has. With the blue one? He's got the red and the blue one. That's what I want. Maybe I'll get my shot. Maybe someone will call me. I want to do the weather. That's what I actually... See, I got to do weather one time. That's kind of what I wanted to do. Always wanted to do that. But anyway, that was Pete Sweeney, Editor-in-Chief, ArrowheadPride.com. Arrowhead Pride Radio comes your direction at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Something I did want to mention before we go. This is cool. Remember how last year the Royals played the Tigers in Omaha? During the regular season game up there, loved it. I love when they went and played in the Little League field. I like when baseball does these things. Or Fort Bragg, when they had that Fort Bragg game, that was really cool. Major League Baseball does. I think the NFL. And who knows what the NFL's doing. You know, they're talking about the 17-game season. Everybody's got to play a game away from their home stadium because they're going to increase the international bulk load of games. But they also mentioned, a little caveat in there, these could be stadium games. Because I think the NHL does it right. When they'll go take the Red Wings or something, and they'll play at the Big House in Michigan. You have 100,000 people there. They take these games or to Fenway or the Busch Stadium where the Cardinals play. The Blues went and played there. I've always thought it'd be cool to take these things to college stadiums. Call it a college stadium series. It sounds like that could be on the horizon, and I'm happy about that. But Major League Baseball is kind of always behind the eight ball a little bit when it comes to these cool things, even though I love the Fort Bragg game, love the Little League game, love the fact that they went up to Omaha last year in the Royals playoff. That was fun. It was fun for the people around here. It was fun for the people in Nebraska that have supported the Royals all those years in AAA. You know, seeing the Tigers and Royals play, I don't care what the teams are, it was fun to have Major League Baseball in the state of Nebraska. But now Major League Baseball came out. They're moving the draft to the College World Series. I like that because the NCAA and Major League Baseball have always kind of been far apart. They've kind of had their arm extended a little bit. It's just like that press conference. I wonder if that press conference between the Royals and the Tigers. Dayton Moore was there. The Tigers brass was there. And Carl Ravitch from ESPN was there. But they didn't have the NCAA. Like, the NCAA wasn't there. Like, that was kind of on. That was kind of weird that of all these people there, you had the mayor from Omaha, the Chamber of Commerce. You had all these Omaha people there in the Royals and Tigers, but you didn't have the NCAA. You know, I thought that was weird sitting there watching them do it. But they're moving the Major League Baseball draft to Omaha. Which means, listen, a lot of these guys are playing in the College World Series. I mean, how often do the Royals take somebody? Remember Coar and Singer? You know, the Royals fans got a chance to watch them in the College World Series. Per this article, MLB.com, in recent years, MLB, this is actually from CBS Sports, my bad. As recently as 2018, 5 first-round picks were playing in the College World Series, including 2 top 5 picks were playing in that College World Series, which they've done a better job. Lately, it's not been as much, but you get them to go to Omaha. Like, you get the top prospects that are going to be drafted, and they've tried to do that. Again, I don't think the MLB draft's ever going to be a huge thing. I like it because it's a learning thing. Like, you're watching the NFL draft, you already know these guys because you see them playing college football. You already know, well, I guess the NBA draft, you know a lot of the players. Some are international, but you know who they are because everybody's talking about them by the time the NBA draft comes around. But you already know these guys. You've seen them. Like, baseball, there's a lot of, I don't know who these guys are, or I'm going to watch their college team, or I didn't see them play in high school because you're not watching that stuff. So hopefully they'll get more of the guys to go there. I know they had that, you know, they've had them in that studio and MLB Network where the guys fly up there and do that. And I know they've tried to make it better. I like with their video and their analysis because it's a learning experience. You get to learn about the players your organization took. And I think it made a lot of sense when MLB, you know, started backing off the games a little bit during the draft, because that always drove me nuts. Like, the draft was going on. Like, take the day off. Make that your spectacle. Make that your prize thing. And I know, again, it takes guys longer in Major League Baseball to get to the major leagues. But have the beat writers that cover the team, have them focusing on the draft that night. You know, you get more articles written about your product and the teams. It's better for the sport. You know, instead of them concentrating on balls and strikes from the actual game that's going on, just take the focus a little bit to the draft. Don't play any major league games on the day of the MLB draft. There are ways to spice it up. There's ways to spice up anything in sports. You make it a spectacle, and they've tried. That one year they brought all those former stars like Bo Jackson and all that to make the selections of the players. They're trying. They're doing their best. But the best isn't yet to come. The best hasn't been there yet. This moving the draft to Omaha, I think, was a huge step in the right direction for Major League Baseball. It's kind of been behind the curve on things. You know, baseball has been so old school in its philosophies, but doing this, I think, is a huge step in that marketization of Major League Baseball. I give them props to that. And hopefully the NFL will start playing these stadium series. You know, let's play in Norman. Let's play in Autzen, where Oregon plays. Let's play in Tuscaloosa, where Alabama plays. Play some NFL games. Give some of this money back to local communities that support the NFL so much. You know, move it around. Make it fun for people to go to. Try to bring down that college atmosphere to NFL games, the tailgating that you normally don't do. Well, here you can, but in a lot of cities where downtown stadiums, you don't get the fun of tailgating. You got to take road trips to Kansas City or Green Bay or whatever where there's parking lots to do it. Fans could go tailgate the hell out of things at these college stadiums. I think it's a great idea, but props to Major League Baseball for making this transition. Thanks to Pete Sweeney that joined us. Thanks to John Kurtz, editor-in-chief, or excuse me, the program director at K-Man in Manhattan. And also thanks to Steven Sturta. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.